I'm so happy to be here tonight talking to Fred Cappuccino. You've driven in the middle of a raging snowstorm, cool as a cucumber. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Louise.
I know that you're kind of a legend in many circles and certainly in our community.
Oh, cut it out.
But maybe you can just tell our listeners maybe a little bit about who you are, what you've done in your life. I know you've been a minister, haven't you?
I've been a minister for maybe 70 years, and I'm 90 now. I've done maybe 600-700 weddings and maybe 1,000 funerals.
Wow.
And early on, I met this young woman who was 19 when we got married, and after a series of disastrous relationships with women, and getting the axe over and over, and getting, I had a tendency to say stupid things to them, and or to do stupid things, and I'd just get the axe and be down in the dumps for some weeks till I met the next one, and then the same thing happened. I'd get the axe, and then Bonnie didn't give me the axe when I did stupid things, and so she kind of stuck with me. And but little did I know that she was a cyclone herself, and I've been going in circles now for these 62 years that we've been married.
Yes, your book is called Bonnie and Her 21 Children, and it's really, it's so hard to describe it, but it's really the story of these 21 children that you adopted and raised, and all of the antics and mishaps and that came upon you along the way. But it certainly is an inspirational story. How did you survive? I laughed when I saw on the cover it said Fred Cappuccino, JBS, just barely surviving. Like, your humor comes through, but you certainly portray your wife as a sort of a beacon of goodwill and love and motherhood.
Well, there's only one Bonnie Cappuccino. People are asking, right now we're in the 30th year of running orphanages over in India and Nepal and Bangladesh, and the lost my train of thought.
No,
what were we talking about?
Well, I was just saying it's such a pilgrimage that you were on with your children, and
yeah.
I can see that you became a couple. But for her, you know, adopting one child and then another and another, I'm sure. Did you ever imagine that your life would take this path?
We had agreed. We made a solemn agreement that we would have two children born to us maximum, because we didn't want to increase the world's population.
Yes.
And if she wanted to adopt a couple of children, that'd be okay. So that would be like four children.
That's what I read in the book.
But it just kept getting one more and one more and one more and two more. And it was just very difficult. I was dragging my feet all the way. But she just moved on. And the problem I have, the really serious problem, is that she knows I'm totally enchanted with her, and she takes advantage. So that's the dilemma I'm in.
And that's right at the root of the whole problem right there.
That's the whole thing. So yeah. I'm not my own person. She goes overseas for 4 times a year for 6.5 weeks.
Yes.
To administer these homes with 1,300 children. And
And the homes you're talking about are the Child Haven homes.
Child Haven,
and those
yeah.
were started in 1985, I think, eh?
1985, the organization started, and the homes were gradually. The first year we started one, and then there was we would go to a place if we were invited, if there was a good local committee that would help out.
Yes.
And run interference with the government officials, so. But Louise, she doesn't give me my own space. So
I think that's a story. I think that you're in cahoots with her. I think the two of you together are a recipe for a lot of good work. That's what I think.
One thing I just want to point out in the book, if I can find it, but there's a footnote here that
yes.
says that the book is 96.7% true.
Yes.
And the rest of it is a blend of blarney and baloney.
Well, I feel that the review was very fortunate because we had, I think we almost, maybe we served as a test for you writing. I don't know what you were thinking at the time, but we did run a series of stories that a lot of them reminded me of this, and they all kind of had the same sort of twist on, you know, you, the poor victim, and Bonnie's driving things that happen that stop. I have to say, it reminds me a bit of me that, you know, if the light is red and you're stopped there, it is a good opportunity to just look for something in your purse, and you figure, why waste your time? You're stuck wasting time, and that's what she does. But I cannot believe the work that you have done. You have, there are six child haven homes in India. You have one in Bangladesh and one in Nepal and one in Tibet. I mean, you or your wife or both of you, certainly you're not unstoppable. You think you can, you just do.
Well, we aren't doing anything new. We decided to just do the best we can with the 1,300 children we have now. And there are another maybe 1,300 who have gone through the process. We've been going for 30 years, so they're now nurses, and they're on their own in the community, most of them doing well.
And certainly in the back of the book, it has, I mean, a lot of these stories are about things that happened, but also the personalities of the different children that the young people as they grew up are in there. And in the back of the book, it has their names and what they're doing now, what they've gone on to.
Yeah.
And do they all keep in touch with you? Do you have big gatherings at any time still?
Yeah. Now, we're talking about our own family.
Yes.
As different from Child Haven.
That's right.
In our own family, they're 21 children. One boy committed suicide some time ago, and that was shattered not only our family but the whole community.
Yes.
And we found out later that he likely was gay, and if we'd have known that at the time, I think we could have saved him. But there were so many people that were affected by his death. And the kids are... We have a reunion in the middle of the summer around either Canada Day or 4th of July. A bunch of them live in the States, so we might get 50 people at our house and with all the grandchildren. And maybe of the 20 surviving kids, there might be 15 or 16 who are there.
So it's whoever can make it comes
yeah.
out to that. Yeah. Let me ask you, there's a lot in the book about... Gandhi, a lot about love, a lot about Buddhism. It's, you really get a feel for different, I call it different ways of thinking than most of us, sort of how we live our lives in North America. And, but there's been such joy, obviously, from what you did. And why do you think the rest of us don't do what you did?
Well, just speaking about love, there's the great American philosopher, Penny Wiggins, who said that she falls in love easily, and it turns guys off. That she said, I'm like, I love you, I want to marry you, I want to move in with you. And he's like, ma'am, give me the $20 for the pizza and I'll be out of here. So there's all kinds of love. And where are we going with all this?
I said, you talk about, well, there's a lot of things that seem to be converging this week at the review, and you are definitely one of them. But I was asking you, why don't more of us reach further than our own communities like you did? Why don't we do what you did?
Well, I think a lot of people are doing important stuff for other people. And I think that we're not really that unusual. I think If a baby was dropped on your doorstep, or any woman in Van Cleek Hill, and there was no other place for that baby to go, I think the woman would just take that baby to her heart, and no matter what her condition was, that would be the focus of her life. And yes. I think the opportunities came to us. In the beginning, of course, it was very difficult to adopt children, and
yes.
We had rejections from two different agencies. One social worker told us that she rejected us, and the reason was that she said, "You have inverted prejudice." Oh. And we said, "Well, what does that mean?" She said, "Well, you, in the first place, you're able to have biological children, but you want to adopt other people's children, and also you are interested in interracial children. And so that means that you don't know it, but you are prejudiced against your own unborn children." And there was no recourse. I asked her, "Well, can we appeal?" And she said, "I talked to my boss, who is a Negro, and he agreed with me." So that was the kind of thing we ran up against in the beginning. But Bonnie is just very persistent and kind of fanatical in some ways, and so we kept at it. She wrote to 103 agencies after that happened. We lived in Chicago, and she wrote to those that were within a day's drive, and nothing happened until after we had five children. Then one of them wrote to us and said, "We understand you have a child and you want to adopt a mixed race child." So we said, "Well, we have five children, but we're..." So we got our sixth child that
yes.
way.
Yes, yes. And the other thing that really jumps out at me is that your flexibility when it comes to adventure. It seems like everything, you must live with the confidence that everything will turn out okay in the end. Is that what you
think?
Well,
Bonnie has that confidence. She's over there in India, and things come up, and she spends the money, and it's my job to make sure that the money is raised, enough money is raised for Child Haven, and that's about $1.5 million a year. And so I'm in a panic in the office there, wondering, now, are we going to send the requirements to the Hyderabad home in India, or are we going to pay our visa bill? And I mean, that's the kind of agony that I... But she just sails along. She's kind of confident that it'll work.
Well, that's a wonderful gift to have. And when you look back, I don't think I shouldn't even ask this question. Would you do it all again?
Oh, gee.
Or would you change anything?
I think I'll pass on that one.
In case somebody's listening. Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, of course I would.
Yes, I know that. I wanted to just read just a couple of sentences from the back of the book. It's from where it says, "A final word from Bonnie and Fred." It's called Glowing. And it's written by you in 2005. It says, "Glowing deep within each one of you is a divine spark. Though some of you may be skeptical or feel you are unworthy, yet the divine spark glows there inside you. Sometimes it is overlaid with self-interest. Sometimes it is encrusted with fear. Yet the divine spark illuminates your soul." And then I'm just going to read the last line, and it's very short, but definitely worth reading. "You are of infinite worth. You possess a dazzling beauty that is irresistible. Trust this divine spark glowing." Are you writing about all of us, or?
About every single individual, yeah. Especially in Glengarry.
Yes, there are some sparks, wonderful sparks in Glengarry, and they've been really supportive over the years of your Child Haven fundraiser. You've had...
It was amazing to us. We had some difficulties in the past, and in Chicago, I was more or less kicked out of our first church when We adopted a child from Japan whose father was an American serviceman. But in Glengarry, we were accepted. The kids were accepted in school. And we thought about it and we talked about it. And I think one factor is that in Glengarry, the two cultures have been living for generations, and it's all right to be different.
Yes.
So,
yes.
It was
yes.
a wonderful place to raise a bunch of kids.
That's wonderful. And do you think, did you, I guess you maybe worked or you just set the example, you communicated that to the young people passing through your life about their spark. That must have been quite a raucous household with so many kids. And
oh, yes, yes. Other kids were envious of our kids, and sometimes they just hang out with our kids at our house, and that was nice.
Yeah. And what did you do for family vacations, or did you did kids just hang
out
at home?
We're on vacation all the time. I mean, we didn't need to go anywhere for vacation.
No.
And we had cows and chickens and pigs, and the cows were wonderful.
Yes.
I figured out that a cow will pay for herself in 2 months.
I saw that, 50 days.
Had calculated. Yeah, when she's in her
prime
best form, yeah.
Yes.
You figure the retail price of the milk. So that was a huge economic benefit to a family with a lot of kids. One of our sons, Ashok, would sit down and drink a quart of milk. I don't know where he put it.
Yeah, kids have appetites, which you have to keep feeding them while you were trying to, even in later years, working on Child Haven. So why did you write this book?
Oh, I thought there's only one Bonnie Cappuccino. People ought to know her story. And I'm getting up in years, and the story ought to, and there are things that I know about her that perhaps not many others know, so we should get it down and put in. There are about 100 pictures in there, I think.
Yes, and, yes, you noted that. I know the pictures are quite, as they say, a picture's worth 1,000 words. It's really... Really, I know Gary Geddes wrote a really nice foreword in the beginning,
yes.
At the beginning of the book.
Gary Geddes was such a wonderful, we were very close, and I might say close enough that we would insult each other.
Oh, well, that's close.
Yeah, yeah. One time when they were going to close the Maxville Senior School, Gary and I kind of conspired, now how can we prevent this thing, or at least forestall it for a while. So I wrote down some thoughts and research and so on, and he made the presentation in front of the school board. There were other groups there who were trying to keep their school open, and they were so polite and holding their, I forget the expression. Anyhow, they're
glad-handing, or
they were just subservient, kind of, and almost kneeling in front of the school board, and Gary Geddes just slam-banged into them. Well, you didn't do this and due process of this and this, and there were 20 points, and we kept the school open for 3 more years.
Wow.
We were so pleased about that, but Gary is we were so disappointed when he and Jan moved away to Vancouver, but we see them.
Yes.
They come to our Vancouver Child Haven dinner.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Separately, they each have new partners now.
Oh. So maybe tell us, where can people buy this book? I know we have Bonnie and her 21 children here at the Review, and you can order it online, I think, too. Eh? There's a page in the back. You can go to Bonnie and her 21 children. That's 21 the numbers, bonnieandher21children.com. And or you can write to Post Office Box 1304, Alexandria, Ontario, KOC1AO. That's to Bonnie Books, Inc. Is there anywhere else locally where your book is that maybe our listeners
well,
could find?
Well, the best place to get it is to come here to the Review.
Look at you. I guess you don't know me well enough because you're not insulting me.
And give Louise $20 and walk That's away right. with your book.
That's right. And I should have, I had a nice gracious introduction here, but I'm quite in awe of this. When you meet people who have done something, it's almost like a magical journey that you have been on with these children. It's just to read this book is... It stops you in your tracks. But you are a recipient of the Order of Canada, and Bonnie as well. The
both
two
of us.
Yeah. And you've been featured on numerous media programs. There's been lots of stories written about you. You've been on Man Alive, W5, Country Report. We could probably list way more.
Recently, Bonnie was on Bangladesh television, and also our granddaughter, because we adopted a child from Bangladesh who... It was right after the Bangladesh War, 1972, and we went over there. Bonnie said, well, those babies that are born from the rape of the Bangladesh women by the Punjabi soldiers from West Pakistan, they're not going to be acceptable in
their
own country.
They're not going to be wanted, and yeah.
We went over there, and in 3 weeks, she was able to persuade the government officials. We brought back 15 babies, and... One of them was our daughter, Shika. And so Bonnie and Shika's daughter went over a few months ago, actually. And I have a picture showing Bonnie in front of 6 television cameras, 6 different, and that was across Bangladesh and also in newspapers. Mm. So she's well known over there. And we so appreciated the Bangladesh government to be able to release the children. They were able to do that according to the adoption law about to be promulgated, which was absolutely amazing.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I noticed that you're getting close to wrapping up, and I didn't want you to say goodbye to Fred before I got a chance to ask him. Just a follow-up question, Mr. Cappuccino, to what you mentioned earlier about the death of your son that you've dedicated the book to. Mm-hmm. You made a comment about that you thought he was homosexual and he was having a hard time of it. And I'm sure that ties back to the stigma that still exists in our society against homosexual or any kind of alternate sexual orientation, I guess. It just so happens that this coming Saturday at Arbor Gallery here in Van Cleek Hill, there is a local woman, openly gay, lesbian. She's defined. She's come out. Very, very active in our community. She was the principal organizer behind Oktoberfest for Bows for about 5 years. We have a description of her in the paper this week as part of the press release for Arbor Gallery. Let me see now. She's a musician, a social activist, a community builder. She's an author, a teacher, eternal student. She's up to a lot of things in her life, but she's really concerned about the lack of support for our youth in our area because the stigma against homosexuality is so strong, it gets pushed underground. Mm-hmm. And she's really concerned that there may be some casualties or some effects. Yeah. I just was wondering if you might have some words of observation or, having been through this with one of your own.
Yeah. I think, actually, I went before a parliamentary committee on this issue. The committee was deciding whether to bring up the question of same-sex marriage to Parliament. And the Unitarians, of which I'm a minister, felt that it shouldn't be because it was already legal in, I think, 3 provinces, and just leave it alone. And one thing I said to the committee was that all 27 Unitarian ministers in Canada would do a same-sex marriage. It's not a question of religion, it's a question of human rights. They were created this way, if you will. They didn't learn that from somebody else. Mm-hmm. And then I told about Kailash, our son, who killed himself. And if society had been more accepting, he would be alive today.
Yes.
he was, of all our kids, he was the most artistic, and his drawings and paintings are all over the community. Hmm. One fellow at the funeral said, "Oh, gee, I've got one of his drawings down. We framed it in our family room."
Yeah. Okay. So that's a really good indication of the kind of loss that society is facing if it doesn't figure out how to be more welcoming and supporting and just gathering up of all of the members of our society of yeah. Whatever stripe and hue mm-hmm. And I flavor.
Just, I just think I was speaking with you earlier today about this, Jean, but the dedication is that Kailash would surely be living today if society was accepting of all people regardless of whom they love.
Yes.
I found that incredibly incredibly touching.
It is. But, it is. So just a reminder that this event is happening at Arbor Gallery, 7:30 this coming Saturday. Lyndall Montgomery is sort of, rather than speaking on the topic, she really wants to foster a kind of conversation, a broad-based conversation of
about resources or yeah. just what room is there in our little small towns and our communities locally.
Starting with acceptance and non-judgment, then moving proactively towards active support and, you know, putting systems in place where young kids can turn to if they're going through questioning their own sexual identity and all that goes with it. I mean, it's a part of growing up, and it needs to be an open conversation, and we have to remove all of the stigma attached to it.
Yes. Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I really appreciate your perspective on that, Mr. Cappuccino. It's really a valuable perspective. It's close to your heart, I can tell.
Actually, I did two same-sex marriages. I don't do weddings anymore at my age, but there were two women, and they wanted to get married, and I thought, well, that would be a good thing I can do, and then another two women, so I feel good about that.
Yes, for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, Louise, I'll just hand it back to you to close off your interview.
I don't know if there's anything else you'd like to say, or if I missed anything, you can talk to our listeners.
Well, just that it's such a wonderful community, and we're so lucky to be here, and we're so lucky to have a wonderful weekly newspaper that is not beholden to anybody. They can say in the review whatever they want to say, whereas the big daily papers, they've got huge companies.
Boards of directors.
Well, and advertising that they can't. They're not free, so I'm very much appreciate the local weekly papers.
That's really nice of you to say that.
As Louise's sign says, she's fiercely independent.
Proudly independent.
I would say fiercely independent.
Yes.
You're just surviving two over there, I think. Truth be told. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, well, that's very nice of you. Well, thank you so much for coming in. And I think it's wonderful that your story is in this book. And I'll remind everyone it's for sale at The Review. And people can send me an email at lsbrohl@thereview.ca if you want to know more about where to buy it. And if you want some links to the website. So thank you again, Mr. Cappuccino, for coming in this evening.
Thank you, Louise.